I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about teacher recruitment and training. We're going to talk about what it takes to find good teachers and what goes into preparing them to perform well with students. I'll be joined for the discussion by Teresa Meredith, president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Dr. Lyndon Hill of Marion University, and Jordan Ame, a Marion student studying education. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about teacher recruitment and training. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. And as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Well, I've got some great guests today to talk about this important subject. They are Teresa Meredith, president of the Indiana State Teachers Association. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly, it's good to have you here. Dr. Lyndon Hill with Marion University. Lyndon, welcome to the program.
John, thank you for the invitation.
Certainly, it's good to have you here. And Jordan Ame, who is a Marion undergrad studying education, getting ready to go into the profession. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm going to start. What is the biggest challenge in terms of teacher training right now? I mean, we probably ought to start with that piece of it. I think we can also talk about teacher recruitment, because I think at the end of the day, we're also going to have to talk about some of the debates going on in the education world and what that's done to people who are entering the profession. I'd particularly be interested in hearing Jordan's thoughts when we get there. But Teresa, I'm going to start with you. What are the most important things about training teachers?
Well, I think training teachers, one of the most important pieces that seems to be being scaled back a bit is the amount of time that they actually spend in classrooms, hands-on, working beside a master teacher as they're learning the craft of teaching. I know the state has pulled back in recent years, but I'm hoping that a spotlight will come to that and that there will be more attention paid to the amount of time those preparing are actually being put in classrooms, actually hands-on, under the guidance of someone who's excellent.
Doing student teaching.
Yes, student teaching, shorter-term practicums, to make sure they're really supposed to even be in the classroom in the first place.
It is a bit of an acquired taste, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to learn that. In terms of preparing students for this, what are the challenges you face, Lyndon?
Well, the reality is that there is such a disconnect, typically, between academic training and what really happens in the real life classroom after a teacher gets there. And all teacher ed programs are trying to close that gap, so to speak, and make those experiences that Teresa made reference to more relevant, mm-hmm. more on-site based. But we really have to focus, the teacher ed programs, and our program included, needs to focus our energies towards site-based.
And Jordan, how far along are you? I probably ought to just ask some basic questions. I think the biography here for Teresa and Lyndon is fairly clear because of where they are in their careers. How far along are you in your education at Marion? What year are you?
I'm currently a senior. I'm in my fall semester. All student teach in the spring. So I'm in my last couple of weeks.
And then you'll be looking for a job here mm-hmm. in about 7 or 8 months. A little bit scary.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, What do you think? What has been the most challenging thing for you in terms of preparing yourself to teach? Have you always wanted to be a teacher?
Yeah, my mom's a teacher in Perry Township, and she used to bring her books home, and I would play teacher in house. First grader, so I've always wanted to be a teacher. The biggest challenge, like, I found so far is really, like, classroom management, which I'm in the class right now, but I've been in the practicum, like, being in school since a freshman. Marion really gets us out in there in the force, so that's really nice. So I just really need to work on my classroom management and handling 28 kids.
What schools have you done your practicums in?
I went to Holy Angels, Hebrew Academy, Flanner House, Crooked Creek all year last year, Immaculate Heart. I'm going into Perry Township this year. I've been, the Orchard up north, mm-hmm. so Decatur Township. I've been a little bit of everywhere. So,
what was the biggest surprise for you?
Biggest surprise is actually how much planning goes behind education. I mean, it's not just reading out of a book. You really have to plan the lessons word by word, minute by minute, and really focus on how to keep all 28 kids or plus is attention. So I think that's the most challenging or surprising I've found.
We are talking about teacher recruitment and training here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter. Well, Lyndon, I'm going to ask, since you're in the business of training teachers,
correct,
and all of that, what makes a great teacher? I mean, what qualities does that person have to have, and what qualities do you see that maybe encourage you to route certain students out of the profession, to say, because that is a part of it too?
Well, my opinion and our opinion at Marion is that the first quality a potential teacher has to have is the understanding that teaching is a vocation. Mm-hmm. And the word vocation comes from the Latin word vocare, which is to call. Mm-hmm. So teaching has to be a calling.
Teaching, in journalism we say, you know, that the reference is that it's a priesthood. It's something that you're called
That's
to
right.
do.
That's right. And it's, you have to approach it from a heart of service. You have to be willing to give yourself over for the well-being of others through the teaching profession. So that's the first thing, is the dispositional aspect. One of the other many variables is, how well does that teacher understand exactly what it is that their job is? How well do they understand the importance of student learning outcomes, identifying the curriculum through standards, through objectives, and being able to deliver that and assess it to students who have all kinds of different learning styles and developmental areas? So it's not an easy task. It's an arduous task.
Teresa, how long have you been a teacher?
22 plus years.
So the profession has changed. The education world has changed quite a bit. Can you talk a little bit about what the biggest changes have been, and whether that has how that might have altered how you approach your job now?
I'm sure. One of the biggest changes, I think, is the transparency piece, making sure that the public knows what's supposed to be being taught in terms of curriculum, and that then the public knows what the results of teaching that, you know, through the tests that we currently are mandated to give. So that's been a huge change. The other piece is, I think we are much better now than when I started in the profession at making sure our lesson plans, as Jordan referenced, are really clear, and we know why we're teaching what we're teaching. And if I can't sit down with a parent and explain to them why I'm giving this instruction to their child and why I'm expecting this child to get to this certain place, then I really don't know my craft very well at all.
We are talking about teacher recruitment and training here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Wendy, welcome to the program.
Hi,
what's on your mind?
Well, I have a question that would probably go out to administrators, folks who hire teachers. I'm a former educator, middle-aged, and the experience I have found out there looking for a job is, you know, the gals and guys just coming out of school seem to be getting the jobs, and I guess I wanted you to speak to hiring someone with their master's who has raised children with experience and someone who could be a mentor to these new teachers. Am I getting it wrong, or...
We'll take up your question. Your cell connection's a little shaky, Wendy, so we'll take up your question. Thank you very much for the call and the question. I'll throw that one to Teresa.
Well, I think in the climate that we're in right now, master's degrees certainly are not what administrators are going after hard and heavy. They are looking for the least expensive route with a strong person. But that being said, someone who has actual life experience is in my experience, my colleagues that have come to the profession with some life experience behind them are actually pretty solid in many cases and can do circles in some cases discipline-wise around some of the really young, early teachers. So I think depends on the school system as to whether they look at those what we would call non-traditional folks entering the profession, folks who've decided maybe to go back and get their teaching degree, or maybe one who got a teaching degree, stepped aside, raised a family, and now is coming back.
We are talking about teacher recruitment and training here on No Limits. We're getting to the point now, I think we're probably, we sort of danced around that. There's been a lot of change, though, obviously, in education, the way Indiana does education in particular. Enrollments, I presume, at most education programs in the state are down. Is that the case, Marion? You're up?
Our enrollment is up substantially over the past 5 years. In 2006, when I came to Marion, we probably had 120 people enrolled in the undergraduate program, mm-hmm. and about 20 enrolled in the Master of Arts in Teaching program. Our elementary undergraduate enrollment has held steady. Our graduate program, we now have 300 students in that Master of Arts in Teaching program currently, and we've had about 300 alums in the past 6 years. So our program exploded. And those people in most of those programs are also teaching in the schools, in the highest need schools and in the shortage areas through the Teach for America and the New Teacher Project program and the Master's Bridge to Teaching and the Action program, which is all of different variations for career changers and people in content areas that decide they want to be going mm-hmm. to teaching.
But, Teresa, is that the case across the state or across...
No, it is not. At some of the universities, we've heard, and based on our work with students on campuses around the state, that enrollment in programs has decreased. But part of that is because of the emphasis on the content area, now insisting that secondary have that content area major before they come into a school of
probably
education.
Probably ought to. I understand what you're saying, but
decline.
For those people who don't speak education jargon, yeah, we probably ought to explain what we mean by that.
Sure.
The content area. If you means, presumably, if you want to be a history teacher, you also have to know a lot of history in
correct.
Addition to having the education degree. So, in effect, it makes you a...
Correct.
So, in terms of what is discouraging people these days from going into the profession?
Quite honestly, one of the things that's discouraging some that have maybe entered the program to teach and then they choose to leave, it's not so much that they don't want to teach anymore. It's that they look out and they see programs like Teach for America who are bringing people who may or may not be able to find a job in whatever their major is in, and they think they want to try teaching for a while. And so then they come with a very limited amount of training into a classroom, and then the data shows that they're not staying. They're not staying beyond a certain period. And so that is really discouraging. If you're looking at a solid traditional program and you've been born to teach and your whole life, that's what you've dreamed of doing. So that's discouraging. And then all the political stuff, I call it stuff, that has occurred the last 4 years has certainly been a bit discouraging.
And when we talk about the political stuff, presumably you're talking about school voucher system, the grading system for schools and teachers,
Teacher evaluation. The way that's being done, sure.
Jordan, you're nodding your head on the teacher evaluations. What is your reaction on that?
It's just scary because, like, I might be a really good teacher, and, I mean, I'm going to go in my first year and be evaluated, and I'm learning still the classroom. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get a good score right away because I'm still transitioning into that. So that's kind of scary that my job's already on the line, and I haven't even been there a month. So that's a little scary. I understand doing it, and it's a good thing, but as a first-year teacher, it's kind of scary. So,
Have there been times that you've thought about pursuing another career or not teaching?
No, I really have a passion for kids. I really want to help make a difference in the world, and I feel like teaching is the best thing for me to make a difference. And I really want to focus on little kids and help them with the reading. So I've always wanted to be a teacher. I'm not going to change that. So
we are talking about teacher recruitment and training here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. As we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about teacher recruitment and training. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Teresa Meredith, who is the president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Lyndon Hill, who's with Marion University, and Jordan Ame, who is a Marion undergrad preparing to go into teaching. We were talking just about some of the changes, the teacher evaluations, and creating some of the, you know, Jordan was saying that it makes her anxious, that it's creating anxieties. Has that altered the way we have to prepare teachers? I mean, I know in the, you know, in the backdrop that I'm most familiar with, preparing journalists, I have to teach them a whole lot more in terms of corporate survival skills than I did. Lyndon, how has all of the education reform movement and this pressure changed the way that we have to prepare teachers?
The teacher evaluation system that Teresa mentioned is, you know, the arduousness and the rigor is a reality. What we've tried to do is to incorporate the RISE evaluation system or whatever system a teacher's in a district as a part of the mentoring that we do with those teachers after they're in the classroom for 2 years. I have to respectfully disagree with Teresa about the turnover rate on Teach for America and the New Teacher Project, because we monitor their turnover rates closely, and it's below 11%, and it has been for the last 5 or 6 years, and there are some districts in this locale that have 20 and 30% turnover every year. So I think it's, I don't think it's completely accurate to say that the turnover rate is higher. What we do with those teachers that are in those most challenging situations is we have veteran teachers like Teresa who have retired or they've, whatever they're doing, they're mentoring our classroom teachers for 2 years. I mean, it's hardcore. They're in touch with them by Twitter, by Facebook, by email. They visit them at least 12 to 18 times a year for 2 years. And a part of that evaluation system, because much of the burden is on the teacher to prepare their evaluation portfolio, we have to assist them. Mm-hmm. It's a tough task. The other thing that we have to do is we have to make sure that the school leaders, the principals, and the people evaluating understand that system fundamentally.
It sounds like, though, we're looking for, you know, the expectations then are different for a Teach for America than perhaps a classroom teacher. Teresa, is that the case, that we're shifting the notion of what a teacher should be?
Well, you know, because I haven't been through the Teach for America program directly, I can't speak to how Marion perhaps prepares. But from what I've read and what we see when you look at the TFA candidates that are no longer in TFA and the nationwide data, I think the expectation's a bit different. For a traditionally prepared educator, there's much more time in the classroom before they ever get turned loose, so to speak, as an actual full-time teacher, whereas with the TFA programs, very limited time in terms of preparation and then being moved into a classroom. Whether they have support once they're there or not, I think that depends on who it is that's helping and supporting the program.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, hello. Thank you very much for time and the conversation. It's interesting to me because I just finished listening to another NPR program in which they were talking about our education. And there was had a book called The Smartest Kids in the World. And I apologize, I can't remember her name. But she was basically, I think, making the contention that one of the things we need to do is invest more in the quality of our teachers. And so she followed some of the smartest kids, exchange students into some of the smartest countries in terms of kids, of how well they perform, like Poland and Finland. And they found that they had completely changed their admission system for teachers in education and made it very prestigious just by accepting something like only the top 5% of applicants, especially in elementary education.
Thanks.
I'm curious what comment you would have on that. And one other quick thing was that she actually said that Teach for America was probably the only program in the U.S. that has actually added prestige, because when employers see it on a application, it's impressive. So just want to make that comment and see what you had to say.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. Well, I can tell, obviously, that that Teresa and Lyndon here are not going to agree on this whole Teach for America thing. So we'll take one more run at that. Has it improved the state of education, Teresa?
Absolutely not. They don't stay. They move on to either, if they stay in education, perhaps something outside the classroom, or they leave altogether. And I really would like to look at the data as the economy improves and see if that pulls some of these candidates away, or if we see a drop once the economy improves and they can seek out something else. We call it affectionately Teach for a While. You'll hear that around the country. That's kind of a joke. Now, and I don't mean to disrespect those who stick with it and go through the program and are really excellent teachers and have decided to stick with what they love. But it is not an easy task to be a teacher. And I definitely think there needs to be a level of prestige that comes with it.
Well, let me take the other part of that, because I have a feeling I think you're both open-minded folks, but I don't think you're going to change each other's minds on this one. So I guess what I would go with here is the other part of Bob's question, which is, do we need to elevate the prestige with which teachers are seen in our culture right now? That's been, a persistent discussion for at least the past 40 years. Lyndon, I see Jordan nodding her head. I'm going to go with Jordan on that one.
I just think teachers don't get as much credit as they should, because, I mean, without teachers, there's not going to be anything else in the world. I mean, there's not going to be doctors or nurses or politicians or anything. I mean, teachers
are... Well,
that
wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the
world. Yeah, I guess. But teachers are the heart of everything, and I don't think we always get the credit for that. So I just think that's one thing we should try to do. So.
What about the approach he was talking about, though, the idea of having people, test in, take the top 5%? There's also a riff. I remember reading an essay, I think it was in Harper's Magazine 20-some years ago, where a guy, I think it was Benjamin Barber, said, if there is an education crisis in this country, we need to solve it the way we solve all of our problems in this country, which is we throw a lot of money at it. that you will attract, the best and the brightest in terms of teaching if you elevate the salaries and all of that, and you say this is a profession that we truly value. Is that a solution, Lyndon?
That's part of the solution. I think another thing that we have to do is we have to finally get beyond the us versus them mentality, not just in the teaching profession, but in society in general, and recognize that the challenges that children face in the 21st century are so formidable. And there are so many variables that come into play in a child's career that we have to marshal all the resources around those teachers. We have to figure out ways to, and not that we haven't, but we've got to figure out ways to get the best, the brightest and the best in those classrooms, compensate them properly, support them properly. The teachers, if you have a school full of great teachers, you've got a great school. If you've got a school full of average teachers, and same thing with school leaders, great school leaders or average school leaders, it's going to make all the difference. And the quality of the teaching and learning process is the end goal. The quality of the teaching and learning process. We have to focus our energies and marshal our resources toward making sure that quality is top quality, because we're the only things those kids have.
I'm about to ask a question that probably is just going to get me into an awful lot of trouble, but because it deals with, you know, questions of gender and age and all of that. But I should say as a preface, my mother was a school teacher for years, and at the time, that was the profession that women went into. That's what they could aspire to. If you were very bright, you were talented, you were driven, and you were a woman, because of the, you know, so many of the other barriers, that was the profession you went into. The fact that women had fewer options in that regard also tended to drive down the prices that we had to pay for teachers. Is part of the problem here we're still living with the vestiges of that system, that we think because of the way that was that we can still operate under the same sort of budgetary model? Teresa, I saw your eyes lighting up on that one.
I think that's part of it. I really do. I think that's part of it. You know, have you seen the bumper sticker, or not the bumper stickers, but have you seen on posts on Facebook and other places that those who can do, those who can't teach? Well, I think it's the other way around. Those who can teach do it and do it well. And then if you can't teach, then you find some other profession that you can do well. And hopefully teachers help you find what it is that you can do well. But I do think that traditional notion is part of it. But I think we need to do a better job of recruiting minorities and males in particular. When you go down the hallways of almost any elementary classroom, you're going to find a large percentage probably of women, and many of them Caucasian women, depending on the corporation you're in and the location and all of that. So I think we have to focus our recruitment efforts, but we also have to look at how we're compensating those folks, because there is, like as Jordan referenced, it's so different than it was when I started.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Marge, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've been teaching for about 31 years, and I've taught elementary school, and now I'm teaching adults. By far, my hardest job was elementary students. I think that they should earn... Elementary, junior high school teachers should earn twice as much as college professors. But anyway, I did want to say...
I'll try not to take that personally, Marge. Thanks.
I did want to say to the new teacher, she said something about one thing that was hard is getting all of the students involved and keeping them involved. And you really don't have to do that. I think that was one of the big mistakes that I made when I was teaching elementary school. It's okay for a kid to daydream in class some. It's okay for them to not do their homework and listen to another group, you know, or even to pass notes. I mean, everything, you know, in moderation. But you don't have to do it all. And sort of with that, I wonder sometimes if we haven't put all the responsibility on the teacher, and is there a limit, or is there too much that we're asking of the teachers now to call kids homes in the afternoons, got to get them attending, we've got to get them to do the homework, and that's another thing. Homework should be dependent upon the class. The grade level, too. Don't send a whole bunch of homework for, you know, third or fourth grade and have them spending 5 or 6 hours. But anyway, so don't have to do it all, really.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Marge, and thank you for listening to the program. Thank you. Well, that point, obviously, about not having to do it all, I think the other point that she addressed that we probably ought to talk about, because I do hear teachers talk about this an awful lot, that, you know, the teacher is just one part of the educational operation here. Yet the teachers seem to be the ones bearing all of the responsibility right now, or the only ones really being held accountable for it. Is that a legitimate complaint?
That's absolutely a legitimate issue. There was research done in the 80s by Roger Farr, I believe from Indiana University, that did reading achievement and studied reading achievement and the different variables that affected reading achievement for better or for worse. And part of that study concluded that, and this was fifth grade males and females, the single most powerful predictor of improved reading scores among fifth grade males was the number of parents in the house, in the home. Mm-hmm. The single most powerful predictor of reading achievement for fifth grade males. That's a variable that's absolutely beyond the reach of the school, of the teacher and the school.
Oh, you mean, Teresa, you don't want to be a marriage counselor, too?
Many of my colleagues already go in before school, stay after school to tutor and to make sure kids are taken care of. We have breakfast programs in schools. We have lunch. We have after-school care. We provide school supplies. You know, this year's poll says that teachers spent more this year on the students in their classroom than they have any other year and previously when that data has been collected or surveyed. So, we are trying to do it all, but I think that's coming at a price.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. Tara, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
My question is about the teachers with the tenure. I live in Indiana, in central Indiana, in a small school system, and we have teachers that are tenured in when they don't meet the requirements. For instance, we have an English teacher who the students were failing and not passing their tests and having low scores when they were taking the different ISEP tests. So they move that teacher on into now teaching social studies. That teacher has a English degree but is now teaching social studies, but they're tenured in, so they can't really eliminate this person, but they continue to put them in different avenues in the school to teach versus bringing in maybe some new teachers that have fresh perspectives or a new way of teaching or a passion for a subject. And I'm just wondering, how do we get that to change? I know that even our school system, we have had parents that have the ability to transfer their kids from our public school into some private schools due to these kind of situations. And I'm just kind of wondering, what should we do and how should we go about getting that change?
Thanks very much for the call, Tara. We'll try to get an answer for you. Teresa?
Well, I think there's some confusion. There is no tenure law in Indiana. Even the permanent status of a teacher has changed. And so I would say it sounds like there is an internal issue there. I would contend that any administrator who finds a teacher who is not doing their job needs to be doing their job and making sure they're not in the classroom, because I consider myself a pretty good teacher. I'd like to think I'm highly effective. Every teacher wants that highly effective rating and wants to be top-notch. And if I have colleagues down the hall for me, that makes me look bad when they're not doing their jobs. And so I want my administrator to do his or her job and do what they need to do to help that person move on. If they don't need to be in a classroom, then they shouldn't be.
London.
I agree absolutely with Teresa. The onus in that case, the responsibility is absolutely on the school leader. And either whoever's responsible for evaluating that teacher or those teachers, that they've got to step up to that job. That is probably the single most difficult part of school administration, school leadership, is dealing with the tough personnel issues. But the onus is on the administration.
I saw you, Jordan, when she was talking about tenure, just shaking your head vigorously. I mean, is that one of the misperceptions about teaching that drives you the most crazy?
No, I just know there's not any tenure anymore. I know, like, there's life license still, mm-hmm. But I know there's not tenure. It's all into the new evaluation program. So if you don't score well 2 years in a row, I'm not quite sure on that, but you get documented and then you might lose your job. But no, I mean, if you've been teaching 20 years, you can still lose your job, so.
And if I could piggyback on that, I would just say that if you're not doing your job, you can be removed immediately. If there are issues, but there is a process for improvement. If someone's sort of borderline and you think they might just need some professional support, there is a process for giving them time.
We are talking about teacher recruitment and training here on No Limits. My guests are Teresa Meredith, Lyndon Hill, and Jordan Ame. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about teacher recruitment and training. And as we talk about education today, we want you to know that this program is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. Well, we've gotten an email question. If you'd like to connect with us by email, you can do so by sending the email to nolimits@wfyi.org. And this is from a RIFT IPS teacher who said, to restate the earlier caller's question, why is experience in education not considered an advantage in the teacher hiring process? A teacher with a master's degree and 10 years experience who is laid off has basically come to the end of his or her career. What a waste. The truth is that there is a glut of highly trained and experienced teachers who are out there actively looking for positions but are unemployable. The only shortage is in math, science, and special education. Teresa, is that the case?
Yes, it is. I was a teacher with 7 years experience at one point looking to move to a different system and had to knock on a lot of doors, and I had to have a building principal who thought I would do a great enough job in her building to fight with the superintendent or really go to bat for me and push, because it came down to a financial issue. Could they afford to pay what was needed to be paid for someone with experience? You know, there is experience that is very valuable when it comes to classroom.
Lyndon.
My take on that is, in my prior life as a K-12 school administrator, we looked for the best quality teacher. And if they had been a teacher and dropped out for whatever reason and wanted to come back, and oftentimes they were women who wanted to raise their children to a certain extent, to a certain age, but wanted to come back, and they were the best qualified, we hired them. It's not the rule in every case.
Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Certainly.
I was interested in hearing your guests contrast the Tony Bennett and Glenda Ritz's approaches to teachers. And I'm not necessarily looking for a judgment, but just to compare contrast their approaches to the state's teachers.
Thanks very much for the call, Thomas. I think that's going to spur a lot of conversation here. Okay, Teresa, I'll let you take the first crack.
I'm trying to be polite and let the other guests go if they'd like. there is a huge difference. One comes to the position, our current superintendent, with tremendous respect for educators, and we feel it in the classroom. Even though we're still under many of the policies that we're learning about and wrestling with change, we feel respected. Whereas before, there was this assumption that we weren't doing our jobs or that we weren't qualified. And that was the premise that we felt many things were coming to us, from that position. And so there's just a huge difference in the way we are treated and talked about and chatted with on behalf of Superintendent Ritz than the prior administration.
Lyndon.
I agree with what Teresa says, but I think it goes beyond Tony Bennett and Glenda Ritz. I think it's the education reform movement in this country and the traditional established educational profession.
Mm-hmm.
Because Indiana is certainly not the only state that's got an aggressive reform protocol in place or has had it in place. I think it's a larger question. It's a national question. It's a cultural question. And there were differences, clear differences, between Tony Bennett's administration and Glenda Ritz's administration. There are some good things about both of them. But I think the question is, do we want to continue to do education reform? Do we want to do education improvement? Or do we want to just say, this is too difficult, let's not do this?
Jordan, in all of this, education has become such a hot-button issue now, and there actually was a time when that wasn't the case. Does that deter you at all as someone who's entering the profession? Do you worry that, okay, I've trained for one thing, but, and you made reference to the fact that teachers bear some responsibility for the politicians we have because they had to have taught them earlier, but, that that a group of legislators or other leaders could get together and, in effect, redraft the principles of the profession. Does that deter you or frighten you at all?
I mean, like, getting a job frightened me. I'm a little scared about that, but there's always jobs out there. I mean, I'm not going to change my profession on these changes because my mom has always told me she's been in it for 20-some years, and she says education always changes. So I'm not going to just, because of these little bumps in the road, change my mind. So I'm going to go straight forward. So.
Yes, Teresa.
If I could just add, I think this whole reform movement has been more of a done to instead of a done with mm-hmm. movement. And I really would like to see us start talking about transforming education. And because it's changing every day, what we decide to do for students for next year, it will be different because technology has so drastically changed the way that we teach and the way that we work. We have to be much more cutting edge than we've ever been. But the done to versus done with is the difference,
how
I think.
How do we get past all of that? I mean, we've done a lot of shows actually here, No Limits. On education, and I know that the perception, a lot of listeners is that we get educators on, and we get advocates for education reform who come on, and they spend most of their time talking past each other. How do we get to the point where it is this done with, that there is collaboration, that the two sides seem to be listening to each other and reconciling some of their points? I'll start with Lyndon and then go to Teresa on that one.
My opinion, and the opinion we have at Marion, is that we have to help prepare both teachers and school leaders that are transformative, that understand that there are thousands of variables that you have to try to contend with in delivering high quality teaching and learning, and that everybody has to be involved in this solution. You have to develop a durable relationship that outlasts the differences, and that's long term. It's not pretty, it's not glamorous, but it's one of the only ways that we're going to get there as a profession, as a vocation.
Yeah, Teresa.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to be able to sit down and have discussions and agree to disagree on some things, move past them, and keep going. But I think there's an even bigger issue. We need to work harder at making sure all of us do in any education profession, whether it be in elementary, middle school, high school, college level, at preparing citizens of society to participate in the bigger discussions. We need to hold our politicians accountable when they're talking about education and they don't know what they're talking about. We as educators need to make sure we are spending time with them and making sure that they're aware of issues, not just assuming that they're doing the research, because there are just too many, let's face it, too many topics on the radar of any legislator to know all of them well. So we have to advocate for ourselves, and we also need to be advocates in the community as well and make sure that folks are aware of the issues and what they can do to help their community.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Megan, and if you want to connect with us through Facebook or Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. She says, I have this perception that one's tenure and union ties protects teachers with poor performance. Wish the focus was more on the kids. I'll throw that one to Teresa. I suspect that one was directed toward you.
Sure. There is no tenure in Indiana, and we simply make sure that someone's rights are preserved, that they have had the support necessary, that if an administrator didn't do their job, that the teacher isn't punished for the lack of administrative support or work. So that's what we do as a union or as an association. But we do not want folks who shouldn't be in the classroom. Actually, we have had local associations who have sat down with members and said, look, this is not going well for you. And I really wonder
this
if you thought, right, you need to be looking at something else.
Yeah, you should be doing something else with your life and your time.
Yes.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was a teacher's assistant for a while in Franklin School District, and unfortunately I had a rather bad experience. I found that the teacher's assistants weren't very well treated. Matter of fact, because I was male, I was somewhat kind of stigmatized for that, although the principal of the school would often direct kids that had problems or were having problems not only in class but at home, would direct them towards me to try to counsel them or work with them. And, you know, I took the good with the bad, but the end, it was a teacher that gave me a negative review who'd been positive all year long that finally turned me away from the path of teaching. And I just want to hear how people feel about teacher assistants and their role in helping in the classroom.
Thanks very much for the call, Stuart. Well, Lyndon, that one.
That one's an important issue that he brings up. There's, in addition to the teacher in the classroom, probably the next most crucial person there is those teacher assistants. If a teacher has the opportunity to have a teaching assistant, one of the things that one of the potential new directions in teacher education is basically the design of a teacher residency model, mm-hmm. a 3-2 model, where you go to your undergraduate for 3 years, but then you become a paid resident in a school for 2 years, similar to an instructional assistant, but you're working toward, right then and there, from the first day, toward your teaching certification. So it tends to professionalize the notion of instructional assistants through a teacher residency model.
And, Jordan, I mean, there's some application to what here to your situation. When you go in as a student teacher or as, in effect, in an apprenticeship situation, you're not yet fully perceived to be a teacher, but you're there as some kind of authority figure. Is it difficult, to achieve respect and maintain respect in that situation?
From the teacher's point of view?
From the teacher and also with the kids, to some degree.
I mean, I go, like, when I do a practicum, I do a few weeks of, like, visiting and just observing, so the kids get to know me, the teachers get to know me. And then after that, I actually start actually putting my name out there and talking to them and teaching them. So I think that building up to it is what helps, but I don't feel any disrespect or anything in the classroom.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. Mike just had a comment speaking to the fact that in our society we just hold the teachers accountable, but I think there's a lot of things that people in the community can do. Like our company participates in a thing called Read Up, where we go to a local elementary school and spend an hour a week reading to kids and having them read to us and help ask them questions about what they're reading to make sure that they're comprehending it and not just, reading words. So I just wanted to make that comment that there's a lot of stuff that the community can do to help out with education as well. So
thank you very
much.
That's all I had to say. Thanks very much for the call, Michael. Yes, Teresa.
I just want to piggyback on some of the comments, really, about, we've all, I think, made some comments in reference to teacher evaluation. You know, there is also a move to change the administrative evaluation. That's been done as well. So mm-hmm. we're in the early stages of what that looks like, and I don't want anybody to go away thinking that I'm down on administrators, because there are some fabulous administrators out there, as Dr. Hill referenced, that they set the tone for the building. Mm-hmm. And so there is this movement. Administrators are being held accountable as well now, having to evaluate, spend time in classrooms, and really know what's going on in their buildings at a level perhaps that they didn't even realize that they weren't getting to. So I think we'll see some changes.
Is that one of the upsides, though? I mean, he sort of made reference to the fact that there are now all of these other forces, that see themselves as having a role in education and talked about a broader notion of accountability, that we're all responsible for education. Has that been one of the one of the upsides, if you would, to this debate we've had about education for the past couple of generations? Yes, Lyndon.
It has for us. We, in 2010, we started a leadership academy that trains school principals and will evolve eventually into a doctoral program. But it's given us, the whole debate has given us the opportunity to work very hard on understanding teacher evaluation and how you train school leaders to do very rigorous, accurate, equitable teacher evaluations, number one. Number two, we've been able to spend a lot of time on hardcore statistics, quantitative analysis. We can talk qualitative analysis all day, and we can talk anecdotally, but we have to understand data accurately so we can interpret those data for parents in the communities.
We are talking about teacher training and recruitment here on No Limits. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the program.
Certainly.
I had a question that was from an earlier statement that one of your panelists made regarding recruitment of male
teachers and in particular minority teachers. My question is, and this is for me in particular, because I am in school right now. I currently manage a school. My earlier education was from a West Coast school where I majored in history, and now I'm getting an education degree, and I'll be starting my student teaching in the spring. But a lot of these professionals who are coming and transitioning into education will probably take a pay cut. And when you look at the statistics for people who are transitioning, how is that differing from what the caller or panelist said regarding the dropout rate from people who are from Teach for America and waiting for the economy to change? Because respectfully, I don't know that the two are going to necessarily coincide with one another. I think teachers who find their path and have a calling to be a teacher will stay, where I think the teachers who are waiting it out and who are never supposed to be teachers will probably find themselves on the chopping block before then. I'll take my call, my answer off the air.
Great. Thanks very much, Eric. Well, we've got just a little bit of time here, so Lyndon, I'll let you take a shot at that one first.
Well, I think that the teacher who knows fundamentally and pervasively that they want to be a teacher, they're going to overcome whatever the obstacles are, even in the event of taking a pay cut. If they have a heart of service and they have the right dispositions toward giving themselves over for the well-being of others, they're going to be a superior teacher, or they're going to give everything they have trying to do that.
And I guess, Jordan, let me throw this one to you. Presumably, since you're just entering with all of this in front of you, you're going into teaching with the knowledge that it's not really the path to riches.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but I still see the importance of, like, building a community and building children's education, so I don't understand.
So the money is not the primary motivator for you.
No, I know I'm not going to be, like, buying a Mercedes or something down the road, but the benefit of actually shaping the future of education in little kids' minds is the fuel I need to live on. So that's good enough for me.
This has been a really, really fascinating conversation. I would like to thank all of you, and I hope you'll come back at some point. I'd like to thank Teresa Meredith for spending this time with us. Teresa, thank you.
It's been a privilege. Thank you.
Lyndon Hill, thank you very much.
Thank you, John. It has been a privilege.
And Jordan, what do you hope to teach? Elementary, secondary?
I want little kids. I want the first or kindergartners, and really focus on reading.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. We will be back next week. You have been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.